All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 8 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We're going to pick up where we left off the other day and continue with this theme of the connection between past and present. The way, a way to understand history that is not typical at all in the way that history is taught nowadays. There is an emphasis on the past at the expense of the present. And this makes a lot of people find history to be boring, and which is completely legitimate, because if that's what history is, just a past disconnected from real life, then it doesn't have any meaning to us here. It's just some kind of bauble, if you will. A bauble is just like a game, and it doesn't matter. This is sadly the way that most historians do treat history. They retreat into what's called the ivory tower. You might have heard somebody describe universities like that. Universities are sometimes described as the ivory tower. And the intellectuals are hiding there, and they are writing history books, and they don't care about real life. And they hope that, they will, you know, be able to live out their lives in that separate place and not have to worry about the present. And strangely, a lot of people become interested in history precisely for that reason, because they don't like the present and they like to take refuge in a separate world, which is the past. So a lot of historians are like that, and sadly, most of the history that you are taught or will be taught elsewhere will have that flavor. It will be, let's go dive into the past. And that's exactly what will happen, is you'll be immersed in some context way, way back, and there'll be no connection to the present. And you'll be expected to be willing to dedicate a large portion of your mental functioning to something that has nothing to do with your life. And then that then sets off a bunch of chain reaction in people. Which usually most people's reaction to that is, eventually to abandon history. And some people become in so-called intellectuals, and they decide to embrace this realm of symbols and ideas and so on, and become, you know, and join the club, basically. And some become historians. And when I decided to become a historian, I did so because I wanted to understand the world. Felt that there were things that I knew from all of the studies that I had done, and I was actually an engineer at the time. I completed my college degree in engineering, and there were things that were really bothering me about the world, and learning about science and technology, I realized, was not enough. So I started to look into other subjects, and history became the one that I was most fascinated by, because I wanted to understand how things had gotten to be the way that they are. And that was my premise, but sadly, I had to go through a lot of history and constantly basically deal with the fact that historians don't think that way. They don't care about the connection between past and present. And as a result, we are where we are now, which is a pretty sad state of affairs. We have this amazing civilization that we live in, and it has come about in the most fascinating progression of events, and nobody knows it, and nobody cares. And mostly, though, people don't know and they don't care, but the sad thing is, people know that they don't know in strange and uncomfortable ways, and they have a lot of anxiety about the world. For instance, if you just kind of observe the way that adults talk about the upcoming election, I think you will be able to read a lot of that anxiety in the way that they face it. And that anxiety and that fear and that sense of the different things that are going on, a lot of that stems from an ignorance that is very difficult for people to deal with. They don't understand the world that they're in, and they live in a society that's, as we're going to talk about today, more and more democratic, and that's actually scary. Because what people know about democracy, even if they won't face it all the time and honestly and openly with themselves, is that in a democracy, the majority rules. And we'll talk about that today more, because we got into it yesterday. And as a result, your fellow citizens and fellow voters are, in some sense, your enemy. Because if they're going to vote with you, then okay, you feel comfortable about that. But the problem is, if they're going to vote against you, you know that if you are in a democracy, those people are going to rule you. And you want to be on the winning side, right? That's the whole point of it. You want your gang in office to make laws that will rule the minority that hopefully you're not a part of. And so everybody's really anxiously running around, very, very worried about who's going to be the next president and who's going to be in charge of the government and so on, because everybody knows in a sort of implicit way that America is much more of a democracy nowadays, and they're scared of the other guys, you know, whoever that might be, right? If anybody's a Republican, they're scared of the Democrats. If they're a Democrat, they're scared of the Republicans. And all the rest of us are scared of both. And it's a difficult situation because now we don't quite have some of the same protections of our rights as used to be in the American system of government. And it's getting people really nervy. And it's a bad sign. It's a sign of a culture that has a break between itself and its history. And a sign of a culture that is kind of doesn't have an anchor, a culture that is floating in a storm, essentially. And it's really scary because not everybody's pulling in the same direction, and who knows where this all goes is kind of the feeling that people get. But you can for yourself, at least, get a command of this situation and an understanding of it. And the full significance of things like the next presidential election. You can understand these things, but there's only one way to do it, and it's through history. There's only one way. And today, I'm going to show you a little bit of where we're going with this. You know, some of you have seen so much of what we're doing already and might feel a little bit impatient. We're not moving into it already. On the other hand, some of you might be like, wow, we're going too fast. I don't quite understand these connections. I don't understand the meaning of it. So it's hard to strike the balance. But hopefully I am doing it. And hopefully you will take it upon yourself to raise your hand and say when you don't get something and not be afraid or ashamed or anything. That's not of any use. And so go ahead and be ambitious and aggressive about learning and try to get as much out of it as you can. And hopefully today especially, you're going to get more of a sense of how interesting this all can be and how relevant it all can be. The ancient world. Right? Our theme is the connection. The ancient world is not separate from us. We live in the outcome of things that happened in ancient times, and our society would not be what it is if some of the ancient history that we have studied had not happened. And in particular, of course, we're going to be focusing on this issue of democracy and republic, making sure that that is clear. And there were some interesting confusions yesterday, which I want to address. And then we're going to carry through to a representation of history that I hope will excite you. So I'm going to show you that representation now as a heads up, as a preview, just to get to get you salivating over it, hopefully. And then we're going to get back into the nitty gritty of some of what we studied yesterday and review that a little bit. So this is where we're headed. I'm going to share my screen. Okay. This is where we're headed. And if you don't understand exactly what it is, of course, some of it you understand. If you don't understand the rest, that's okay. But by the end of today, you will. Okay? You are here. You get all this kind of stuff. But the colors and the arrangement and everything, all right, you're not going to be familiar with it. But you will understand by the end of today. Okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to go from this to this, all right, so that you can see with greater clarity the meaning, the significance of what we are learning this year, okay? But for today, I'm going to start with this. And I want to review a couple things to make sure that we have the right terms of reference and that we understand the major connection between us and the ancient past. Okay? A connection that is so profound that, remember yesterday what John Adams said? President John Adams, the second president, what he said about Athens and Rome? He said you could throw out all the rest. He didn't say that, but that's my paraphrase. But that's what he meant, was you can throw out all the rest. If you study this, you will have the proper foundations for a society, for a proper civilized society. If you study this, all the rest, you can throw it out. And I don't agree with that anymore. I mean, I understand the sentiment, and there's some truth to it. But I don't agree with that at all anymore, in the sense that we live in a very different world than the founding fathers lived in. And so there's other things to learn now that are very, very important for us. But I agree with him in general that this is the most important connection between us and the ancient world, lies in studying Athens and Rome, and their cultures. And it's a beautiful connection to know and enjoy, if you can see it, grasp it, and think about it. So that's what we're going to do. And to see that connection, I want to revisit some terms here. In particular, I want to revisit these terms here that we were talking about yesterday. And I felt like we did okay, but there were some confusions and maybe some not so great formulations. So I wanted it written down. Okay. And so let's revisit this and talk about a few things and get things clear here. Okay. So I'd like some help from you guys. How about democracy? Will somebody be my reader here, please? And, let's go ahead and read. And of course, raise your hand on any points that are confusing or that you want to challenge or that you would like an elaboration on. Okay. So Abby, I'd like you to get us started, please. Line by line, please. Whatever's highlighted. Democracy.
The rule of the people, the demos.
Okay. The rule of the people, the demos. So in Greek, demos means people. Okay. And krasi comes from the Greek word kratia, and that is to rule. Okay, so the people rule in democracy. But that is a vague formulation, and we can't allow ourselves to have that kind of fuzzy language. So let's figure out, how does it work? Continue.
To decide the laws, the people vote.
Okay, so how do they rule? How do they make the laws of the land? They vote on them. Go ahead.
The winning side is called a majority. The losing side is a minority.
Okay. All right. So when you vote, it's a very simple procedure. You've got 100 people voting. 50 plus 1. 51 is a majority. Anything bigger than that, you've got more than half. So that's your majority. And the minority is the smaller group. And the way that it works in a democracy is, finish it off.
In a democracy, the majority rules. And then in parentheses, the minority.
Right. The majority rules the minority. In other words, the majority and the minority disagree. But when they vote, you know, it's the bigger group that gets its way. And the minority has to take it. Okay? So, you know, when we get down here to this point down here about America being a democracy, we have some interesting examples of America becoming more and more democratic lately in ways that were impossible in the past. So the most recent one, which I'm sure your parents are talking about, and that it's really a big deal to them right now, because a lot of people are very anxious about it, is the issue that in America today, recently, it has become the case that increasingly healthcare is a democratic institution, which means that whether or not you can see a doctor, or, you know, how much you get, you know, have to pay to see a doctor, or how much you have to pay in order to get any of your so-called health care, right, depends a lot on the rules that other people are making for you. And those rules have been voted into place. And, you know, it's commonly called Obamacare because it's a project of the president. And that was voted into place. And essentially, it has now become the case in the United States that the majority can force the minority to buy healthcare. You don't have a choice anymore. And if you don't do it, then the government will fine you. And if you don't pay that fine, guess what the government will do next? It'll put you in jail. And this is not a joke. And so now a lot of people are, you know, struggling to deal with this situation, that it's possible that their fellow citizens would vote in such a way that they would create a new set of laws that that now essentially radically alters the landscape of how you obtain healthcare in the country. That's democratic. In a democracy, people do that to each other. They vote, and the group that has the most votes gets to make the laws. And in the United States, which has a constitution, there's some things the government can't do. But as you may have learned, the Supreme Court, which judges laws against the Constitution, decided to allow this to happen, which is a very, very, it's a landmark case in the entire history of the Supreme Court. Because prior, you know, going back maybe as little as 20 years ago, that would have been impossible. The Supreme Court would never have allowed the American government to make a set of laws like that, but now it's allowing it. So this is a fascinating time. So America's changing. It's more of a democracy, less of a republic. Okay, because more and more, whatever the people want, they get. But by the people, of course, we mean this group right here. Okay? And so that's the challenge. And so you're going to see it. You're going to see it. And just tell you to look for it in the grown-ups in your circle. I want you to put your finger on the pulse of the grown-up world. And you're going to see how nervous people are right now. And for a year to come, they're going to be really nervous about one thing. About who's going to get elected. You know why they're so nervous? Because they know that whoever is in charge can take away their rights in one way or another. In one way or another. And so that's the sign of a democracy. In a republic, it's not that important who's in charge. It really isn't. But it does matter, but in different ways. But now we're living in the United States much, much more of a democracy all the time. It's undergoing a transformation. It's in a long-running transformation, but it continues. And you'll see it. You know? So like I say, I invite you to consider the importance of history in the following way. Take the pulse of the grown-up world when it comes to this election and observe the anxiety. Observe the fear. Observe the sentiment that people have, whatever group it is that they belong to, whether it's Democrat or Republican or other, and how they feel about other people in America. And you'll get I think you'll get a lot of insight into what, you know, democracy really means. And it's not that pretty. It's so fascinating, so fascinating. Which is why, okay, and so now, it's such an interesting thing because the Athenians, I admire them greatly. And as you will learn, I consider the Greeks to be the greatest civilization of all time. And so the United States is a wonder. It is the greatest country of all time. The Athenians, I consider the Greeks to be the greatest civilization of all time, which seems to be a contradiction in the sense that they created a democracy, whereas the Romans created a republic. So which one is it that you like, Mr. Powell? But you'll see that I think they were amazing, and this was the best that they could come up with in that particular setting, which is quite different than life is today. So different reasons why I admire what they came up with very much. But we'll see how it worked back then as opposed to now and so on. Okay? But it's very clear, it's very important to have these terms straight. Democracy is the rule of the majority. Okay, now we got to go to Republic. Okay, another reader, please. Shoot your hands up anytime you want, of course, but Anyway, volunteer readers. Okay, Keane's going to do Republic for us. Keane, go ahead.
Okay. This is also a government involving the people, the public.
Okay, it's right in the name again. Right? The first name has demos, people in it. The second name also has people in it, but the word public. Okay? Literally, it's from Latin. It means, in the original word republic, it was res publica. That's Latin. Okay? That's where republic comes from. The public thing. A government that is a public thing. Okay? So now we shorten that, and the English version is republic. Okay? So, keep going.
In a republic, however, certain laws cannot be changed. The Constitution.
Keep going.
A constitution prevents the majority from taking away the rights of the minority by vote.
Okay, stop there for a second. Okay, so I'm going to put a special word in there to just to improve that formulation a little bit. A Republican constitution prevents the majority from taking away the rights of a minority by vote. Okay, so this is the key difference between democracy and republic. The restraints that are in place, the barriers that are in place to prevent the majority from being oppressive. A republic and any system that approximates a republic, for instance, Canada has a similar system and other countries out there to some extent, like Britain as well, have certain kind of republican features in their governments. Okay? They have laws that people can't just vote away. And so that is what protects people's rights from the majority. Okay, so that's the key thing about it, is that a republic is a system of government that protects rights. Now, I say that, and I put in this word Republican here, because does anybody see why you have to say those particular things? In a republic, certain laws cannot be changed. They're called a constitution. Does that necessarily make a republic if you have certain laws that cannot be changed? We have to have all the pieces in place here. What is so important about the nature of the laws in a republic? Keane, you get my point?
The laws have to, well, it depends on what they're protecting from. I mean, you can have a law that says, you know, the people shall not vote to make owning a dog illegal. Or you could have a law that says, you know, the people cannot vote to kill someone. You know, the second one is where you have rights. You know, people cannot vote to the property, etc.
Right, so those are very specific examples, but you're on the right track here, that the point is the character of the laws, right? So if the laws say that there shall be no private property in the entire country, everything belongs to everybody, well, have you got a republic now? Right? Have you got a constitution that says that? Because actually, the people of ancient Sparta had a constitution pretty much like that. So if the laws say that you have no rights, well, is that a republic? No, it's really, that's a whole different thing, right? So in a republic, you have laws that can't be changed. You have a constitution, and those laws, the point of them is to stop the majority from taking away the rights of the minority. That's when you get a republic. It's a system of government that protects rights. Okay? As we'll see, it's really hard to do. Nobody has ever done it perfectly. The Romans did well, not well enough. It collapsed. America's founding fathers did even better, but imperfectly again. And so as a result of the contradictions in the American system, the republic has gradually gone away and been replaced by democracy. Okay, so this is where the first republic was Rome. America was created as a republic, but has become more of a democracy. Okay, this is the transformation that you are living through right now. And you will hear those. I mean, in a way, it's really hard. I want to acknowledge something about life today and your situation. Okay? I want to acknowledge something really important. It's really hard to figure things out these days. Because People use words nowadays in the most perverse ways. They bend the meaning, they break the meaning, they repurpose the meaning of words constantly. And so we're in a society that is very non-objective in its use of ideas. And so it's very hard to sort out the meaning of words nowadays. I'll give you an example of why Republican democracy are so hard to sort out, because we have these two political parties in the United States, capital R, Republicans, and capital D, Democrats. Now, when you hear that, you would think that that means that one side represents Republic and one side represents democracy. Kind of pure and simple, right? Oh my good, but you couldn't be more wrong. So it's nowhere near that clean of a break. And in fact, the two parties are much closer than most people realize. And they have a lot of overlap. There's certain things they disagree on. And in some cases, the Republicans are less Republican than the Democrats are. And in other cases, the Democrats are more Republican and so on. It's a big shimble. And it is just awful in a way that we have these two political parties that have these names embedded in the way that people vote nowadays. Because if you paid attention to the Republican Party, for instance, which was born just before the Civil War, it represented something very different back then than it represents now. But the name has stuck. Same thing goes for the Democratic Party. When it was first born, it represented certain things, and now it represents other things, but the name has stuck. And that makes it even harder to figure things out. Okay, so having clear definitions of your terms is one of the ways that you can sort through the mess that is modern American politics and get a little bit of a grip. It's not the only thing you need. History is another part and so on. But this is part of what we need. But even if these terms you might want to contend with, you know, this particular interpretation or that, and you want to have some kind of layered meaning of this or that, very common nowadays to shoot for that outcome, you know, ultimately, none of this exists. This is my key point. Even if you want to go ahead and embrace whatever woozy definition you want for these words. Ultimately, none of this exists without this. Okay, that's the connection. None of it. There is no... Remember what John Adams said, and he was correct. There's more credit goes to Athens and Rome than to anybody else in terms of how to make a proper government. You can take the rest of the world, add it all up. It doesn't come close to either one of these. And we're going to talk about that this year. But that is a true statement. And that nothing of the freedom that Americans know today would be possible without what these people did. So that's something to know, isn't it? You cannot be a free human being on this planet without these things. Nowhere on this planet. Without recognizing that it comes from this. It doesn't come from anywhere else. That's huge. It's far away and it's distant, right? But it's a huge connection that we have. And I'm going to show it to you today here. This diagram that we're going to work our way towards is a little bit of, it's the beginning of a demonstration of that. Okay? So what we're going to do is I'm going to take this timeline and I'm going to turn it into more of a Portaland chart. But before I do that, I want to make sure everybody's comfortable with what I mean by that. Right? I'm going to take this and turn it into more of, where is the other one? More of one of these. Huh? Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's just revisit this concept here. This is a Portaland chart. And what does it allow you to do? What's my metaphor here? What does a Portaland chart allow you to do? Abby?
Basically, like, it tells you how to go somewhere to somewhere. For example, from, I don't know, Italy to Alexandria.
Okay.
But you have to know where you are first.
Okay, right, exactly. A Portland chart is a way of navigating from where you are to someplace else and back. Right? So the example that I like to use is navigating from Rome out into the ocean where you can't see anything. Right? And maybe it's in the clouds, and maybe there's fog, or maybe there's a storm and you can't see land. But you can calculate the distance that you're traveling, right, and plot a course, and using the principles of navigation, get yourself where you need to go. And then go along the coast, and then you get to, this was my example, from Rome to Alexandria, which would have been a pretty cool voyage that somebody like Julius Caesar would want to do. Okay? So the point of a Portland chart, and the metaphor here is, wherever you are, you can get anywhere else. And then? And then what? Juliet?
And then get back.
And then get back, exactly. I mean, unless you are moving there for the rest of your life, right? The Portland charts were for merchants, right? So you would want to be able to get there and get back. Get all the wonderful stuff from the Oriental markets that came through Egypt, get them to Rome and sell them for a massive profit, right? So the point here of a Portland chart is it allows you to navigate from wherever you are to wherever you want to go and back. Okay, so just to revisit that here, because this one, this just chart that we're starting with, this timeline, is, you know, it's decent, but I actually want to take it to the next level. I want to make it more like a Portland chart. And so we're going to go ahead and do that. Of course, we are here, so we are going to try our best to make a connection between ourselves and the things that we are going to study. So here's the transformation that we're going to undertake with our chart. So here's transformation part one. So notice what I've done here. I want everybody to be comfortable step by step. So take a look, going from what we had before to the next step. Why is this separate? Rosie, why is that separate?
Because the two main things that matter are country.
Okay, right. Because they have to do with America. This line over here is going to be for America. Right? This stuff over here is not directly in America. So we're going to start separating things out, not having them all on the same line, okay? But we're going to have a separate line for America. And actually, I'm going to use some color coding as well. Okay? So, who can tell me what all the colors are now going to be on the charts that we're going to use from now on? Obviously, America is blue. All right? What are the rest, Theo?
So I think green is modern. Gray.
Modern
is
what? Really modern
and
what?
Then,
but green is not modern then, America. It's modern what?
Modern history.
Okay, I see what you're trying to do, but no. Start with gray.
Okay, so I think gray is Roman.
Yeah, Greece and Rome. Okay? Greece and Rome. Okay, so what comes after Greece and Rome?
European.
Okay, good. Now we're getting there. And, of course, what came before?
Ancient history.
Okay, ancient, or in this case, Egyptian. I see what you're doing, Theo, which is perfectly fine. You're generalizing. Right? But actually, I'm doing this kind of step by step here, and you're going to see that this is meant to represent Europe only. Okay? And this is meant to represent Egypt, and we'll see some others associated with it. Okay? But I'm just taking what we have and breaking it apart. Okay? And now, I'm going to simplify this here and I'm going to take away the images and I'm going to simplify the text. Okay? Take away the images and simplify the text. Okay? Have I done anything yet that's got somebody confused? Have I done anything yet that has, you know, whoa, you just blew my mind, Mr. Powell? I don't get that part. Say so now, because it only gets more complicated from here. Right? Everybody happy? Raise your hand if you're happy. Okay, good. Everybody's hand went up. Okay, put your hand there. See, at least sometimes I can get people to raise their hand even if they're not going to say anything. Okay, so Nemo, put your hand down. And then at the end of class, we'll play that video. If you're happy, da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, anyway. So now, don't ask me to sing. All right, I can teach history, but I can't sing. All right, so here we are. And what I'm going to do with this now is I'm going to simplify the chart a little bit. I'm going to take these rulers away so that it doesn't clutter up the diagram too much. And I'm just going to have one ruler for any line that I put in my diagram. See what I just did? I'm going to set up a system where the ruler is on the bottom. And all you want to do, if you want to find out what's going on in one particular place, is you just obviously trace that line up there, right? Okay? And I'm doing that because I'm going to stretch things out a little bit further, in fact. I'm going to take Egypt and I'm going to separate it. But notice that I did something else. Okay, ready? This one is a really good step to pay attention to here. So I want everybody to try to detect the things that I did. From here to here. I know the lines shifted a bit. I wish they were exactly in the same place, but that's not the meaning, right? What are the essential changes that I made? There are two of them. Juliet, what's one of them?
You drew a line from Columbus down to the European history.
Okay, hold on. Hold that thought. Okay, Juliet said, I drew a line here. Now I want you to pay more attention, Juliet. Ready? Okay, what else did I do? What else did I do? I didn't just draw the line. What else did I do?
Oh, you changed the color.
Okay, this line is what color? Obviously, green. Okay, this has been changed to green. Why?
Because that's still European.
Yeah, okay, good. All right, see, now we're... So we got the European part that's green all the way through to the present, and we don't have any anchor facts for that yet in our studies, right? But the thing is, this is European colonization here. Columbus comes, and then the Europeans come. And we're still part of Europe, essentially, until America becomes independent. And then we get the blue. Okay, so this is a more precise way of characterizing this. And remember, we don't have any connection to ancient history. Unless what happens? Unless the Europeans come over here. Otherwise, none of this happens, right? So this is the crucial connection for us. This kind of S shape here connects us. Rome, through this, across the Atlantic, to us. Okay, this is our most important line. Okay, what else did I do? You know, the other thing that I changed from this to this. Abby, go ahead.
You broke Egyptian history off of the end of Athens and Rome.
Mm-hmm. Right. I left Egyptian history off on its own, and notice that I extended it. Okay? I'm going to treat it as a separate story. But what else do you notice? I got this green line here. What do you guys notice about the purple line? Which is very important given the theme that I've been pursuing for the past 2 weeks. Theo? Pardon me. Was it Theo or Timothy? Theo, go ahead.
Well, it's not connected.
It's not connected.
Anything else.
Okay. So we don't have a connection quite yet, and there really isn't an essential connection. In other words, I'll put it to you this way. There's nothing about American society that takes, that is rooted in ancient Egypt. Okay? People in America do not worship Egyptian gods. People in America do not have an Egyptian form of government. People in America do not, basically live their lives in the same, nature-driven system of Nilotic agriculture that the Egyptians had, and so on, right? So there's no connection. So actually, Egypt is actually very difficult to connect, and it's much more indirect, as we're going to find out. For starters, it's not connected. Okay, so right now, the truth is, if you tried to formulate a connection, you wouldn't be able to do it. You might, actually, I shouldn't overstate the matter. You might be able to. There might be people here who could make the connection. But it is very, 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 it's a partial connection at best. And so I've disconnected it. But I've disconnected it because I'm going to do something else with it. So get ready for that part. Okay, here comes the rest of our fun. Okay, now what did I do? Yikes. Yikes. We're going to use colors, and I'm not going to write the names down. But what happened? Theo says, more colored lines! Pretty colors, pretty colors. Okay, that's true. So notice what happened. We've got the blue, the green, the gray, and the purple. All of that is going to shift up and make room for other stuff. Okay, why? What is going to happen there? All right, let me tell you a little bit more about this. Okay. The purple goes, does anybody know? All the way until when? The gray goes until the fall of Rome and then becomes European. What about Egypt and that whole world over there? What happened to it? How come it's not still purple? Why did I change the color? It changed color over here, changed color over here. Why do we get change of color? Timothy?
Wasn't it conquered by some Middle Eastern empire?
Absolutely. Okay. Not long after the fall of Rome. What empire? It's still brown today, so it's still the same one. Although it's not an empire anymore. Theo?
Is it the Muslims?
Yeah, it's Islamic culture. Okay, so in 622 AD, Egyptian culture and all of that stuff in the Middle East disappears. It disappears over a period of time, just like Rome fell over a period of time. But it is replaced, and it's an entirely new culture. So today, we don't have Egyptian culture. We don't have Egyptian gods in the Middle East. What we have is Islamic culture. That's the brown line. All the way through to now. Okay, so our world has certain major cultural blocks in it. We have America as a major cultural block. We have Europe as a major cultural block. Not Athens and Rome, that's extinct. We have the Islamic world as a major cultural block. Not Egypt or Mesopotamia or Persia or any of those things. They're gone. Okay, major cultural blocks. Rosie, what's your thought or question?
Why did you label them? Because, like, I thought you can't go back farther than Medes and
Armor. Not historically. Not with any accuracy. Okay? So, in other words, there's stuff that we know through archaeology and through other prehistorical, you know, sciences that help us uncover prehistory, but not with a narrative. So none of the stuff that happened before 3000 BC is accurate to anything more than plus or minus 100 years. So it's not even really history. So no, we can't go back any further than that. Everything that happened over here is so fuzzy, we can't really call it history. Okay? All right. So what other major cultural blocks are there in the world? Two of them are quite ancient. Anybody have thoughts about what they are? I think I might just go ahead and annotate because we are over time. I was hoping that some people might be able to guess what some of these are. But I'm going to go ahead and annotate. Okay? So this cultural block, okay, it's Russia. This one is India. And this one is China. Okay, these are the cores of other major cultures in the world. We could say China and East Asia. We could say India and South Asia. We could say Russia and Eastern Europe. Okay? These are the major cultural blocks in the world. Okay? We're going to fit Africa in there at some point, but we can't quite do it yet. Okay? And I'll explain why later. Okay? But these are the major cultural blocks in the world. And our goal here is to fit what we are going to do this year in the big picture. And now I'm going to reveal the final sum. But before I do that, Rosie, question or comment?
Oh, that's the best.
Okay, here we go. Final sum and a new something for you to ponder before next Monday, which is so fascinating. Okay, I'm going to take the colors and I'm going to make them thicker, for one thing. You might have remembered that at the beginning of class. And then the next thing I'm going to do is demonstrate something that is so profound that it's you cannot overstate the importance of it. Here we go. Okay, I made the colors thicker, but something else happened. Which will give you a new perspective on why we must study ancient civilization. Okay, Theo, what did I do?
I think what happened was globalization.
Well put. Well put. In a word. But driven by what?
The Europeans.
Yeah, absolutely. Driven by Europe. Okay? So Russia, in red, began to westernize much earlier than other cultures. And it's a hybrid today. The Russian system of government, Russian culture, Russian life is a hybrid of Russian culture and European culture. Starting in the mid-19th century, through European imperialism, the Islamic world, the South Asian world, and the East Asian world were all partially assimilated by Europe. India was completely conquered. China was forced into devastating subordination. Islam was dismembered, conquered, and in many regards, those societies and civilizations were penetrated by European civilization. So notice the world that we live in. No matter where you are, you can trace your way back to the path is different for everybody, right? If you're living in Greece today, well, that's easy, right? Tracing the path back to ancient Greece. If you're living in Greece today, tracing the path back to ancient... Pardon me, I want to type this here. Why can't I type? Sometimes annotations don't work properly, right? So modern Europe today is very easy to trace the path back to the ancient world. It's a straight shot. Living in America today, if you want to trace how your society came to be and relies on the ancient world, you got a more indirect path, but similar. You get direct colonization by Europe. Okay? So, same thing is, though, if you live in China... No, how about here, a better example? India. Okay? You live in India today. Why is your society the way that it is today? Well, on the one hand, you trace, obviously, back like this. But on the other hand, there's no way to explain the way that it is unless you go like this and like this. Is that true? Somebody either agree or disagree and make an argument. I'm gonna go back and do that again. What do you guys think? Is that true, what I just said? Okay. If you live in modern India today, you want to understand what your life is like, you trace this line. Absolutely. But there's no way to understand it unless you trace that line and this line. Is that true? Keen?
So it is true, and it is true because the English, the British Empire, basically conquered. I don't think that's the best specific term for what it was, but conquered India and established, you know, deep cultural implants. And since Europe is connected to Athens and Rome and that culture, therefore India is connected.
That's true, but I can do it. You can do it more directly than that and more present centrically. And it's as simple as this. If you go to Wikipedia and you type in India, and you will see India is the world's most populous what? If you want to cheat and go do it right now, go ahead. Theo is not the most populous country. It is the most populous what? Keen?
Democracy!
Who came up with that exactly? Was it people in India? Guaranteed no. Okay? India was a very backward politically culture when the Europeans arrived. It was ruled by petty princes called Rajas. And others who were called Khans because they were Islamic leaders. And it was in the throes of a massive cultural context between Islam and native Hindu culture. And when the British conquered it and transmitted Western values to India, they embedded Western political theory into Indian culture. And now India is the world's most populous democracy. Nobody in Hindu culture would ever have invented that, ever. So there's only one way to understand India today. Its own culture plus the connection to Europe, which means the connection to Athens and Rome. Now, what does everybody say about, and we can do the same thing for every other culture that in the world. The connection is not as obvious or as straightforward. But I guarantee you, you cannot understand Chinese culture today, the yellow, without understanding its connection to Europe and to the ancient world. You cannot understand Islamic culture today. And the whole problem of Middle Eastern terrorism, you can't understand it unless you understand the impact that the West has had on Islam. And that takes us all the way back to this. And a contest. See, the Islamic culture, all of them out there, in fact, but Islamic culture is the best example, is that if you want to understand the Islamic world, you got to go back to Muhammad, of course. But in the meantime, you got to go back to this. And what you will find is a massive conflict between these two. There's this part and there's this part, and they can't figure out how to work it out. Okay? So this is what we're going to be working our way towards, is an understanding that there's nothing in the world that you can look at. Nothing. Not Europe, not Russia, not Islam, not India, not China, and yes, oh yes, by the way, not America, and not anything in between, and there's plenty of it. Okay, I'll show you. Like I said, like Africa, for instance, and Latin America, and Brazil, and Japan, and all the other tinier ones, right? There's a lot of them. Okay, I'm only showing the big ones. There's nothing you can understand unless you draw these lines. Nothing you can understand unless you draw these lines. Anything that you try to understand about what's going on over here without drawing these lines is superficial. That's the thing that's amazing. So you ask me, what is the most important, you know, content in all of history? Well, you look around the world and you say, okay, these are the different cultures. How come they are the way that they are? Every single one of them, you've got to trace back to this. Amazing. Of course, you trace them back along their own lines, too. But they're all connected, and they're only connected one way. They were only connected by one people, the Europeans. And that caused certain things to flow through to everybody. We are now in a fascinating world where everything is interconnected. And the agent of all that interconnection was what we call Western civilization, the green, with its roots in the gray. Pretty neat, huh? I mean, does that give you kind of a new appreciation for history? I hope. Maybe a little bit of a sense of anticipation that you're going to be learning something interesting this year? Keen?
Absolutely. And I think, let me say what I was going to say first. I think that this, what you just did, the progression of the incorrect timeline to the Berlin chart of history, and then drawing those lines from all the different cultures back to Athens and Rome through Europe, I think you could easily put that up on your YouTube channel as long as you don't think that gives away
too much.
That's a video that could go viral. I really believe that.
Yeah, I'm not going to, because it's going to be in my book, and I'm going to introduce it for adults first in my book. So you guys are getting a sneak peek at some of the things that are going into my book. You get exclusive access. Nobody else gets this stuff. You're not allowed to share it. Abby, go ahead.
I just want to say that I'm super excited for this year.
All right, good. Me too. I'm excited to teach it. It's one of the great difficulties for me is some of this stuff is still under development, right? I mean, I have never taught this before. I've done ancient history quite a few times, and I always felt like, there's just some parts of this that, I'll confess to you, there were some parts of it I said to myself, I wish I didn't have to teach this. I don't like it. There's something wrong with it. There's something that's not working, and I didn't know what it was. And so by changing my perspective to what I call present centrism, I've been able to sort it all out, basically. And I'm really excited about that. And I hope that what it does is it allows people to see that that history is not what they thought it was. And that there's a possibility for something much more exciting, something much more relevant, something much more instructive. And I feel as though, and remember what I said at the outset about the founding fathers, they said, history is that knowledge most useful to us. And that's how they built the United States. And I feel that if we can live in a society that once again is in connection to, that is connected to history, I think we'll be okay. I think that it is that is going to be a decisive factor shaping the culture of the United States and of the world. And so this is why I do what I do. And so hopefully I'll learn more about teaching you guys and this year and get it even better sorted out in my mind. I'm working hard to write a book, and it's so hard. It's so challenging. But it's a beautiful challenge, and I hope I can pull it off. And it'll have stuff like this in it. More advanced than this, but in some ways. But, cause I'm, I gotta be careful about how I present it to you guys, so it doesn't overload you here. But this is getting close here to a proper way of looking at the past with all of it. Just like a Portland chart, you go to the past from wherever you are, you're in modern day China, and your stock market is crashing. Stock market? Where did you get that idea? Aha! Wait a minute. Stock markets, where were those invented? Right about here. Why do you have stock markets in China? Why is your stock market crashing? And what is, you know, who are you trading with? And so on and so forth. And why do people feel like China should have a democracy? Why do people constantly criticize the Chinese government because it's so oppressive and so undemocratic? Where did we get that idea again? Oh, yeah, of course. And so on and so forth. Right? So it does all fit together. And it does all make sense, even if it's not all working out as well as we'd like. We can make sense of it. All right, that's enough. I'll go on and on and on, and I'll never stop talking. So we'll just call it a day. Anyway, we're working our way here to a new way of looking at history. And so when we start, because we are going to go back to the very, very beginning, Mayonnaise and Armor. When we go back here, we'll know why we're going back. And we'll know how to trace our way back to where we are and make sure that we're always connected, which is going to be pretty tricky, right? Does it go like this? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, what's the connection? And how do we navigate our way to Egypt and back? It's a pretty interesting story. All right, we'll get to that soon enough. Thank you, everybody. So tomorrow's history through art.
Thanks.
All right, you betcha. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.